The much-acclaimed TV show The Wire just ended its third season. A new 5-DVD set of the first season is now out from HBO. Critic John Power says the series reminds him of an older kind of storytelling.
Back in the 19th century, novels were published in serial form. It's said that the books of Charles Dickens were so popular that throngs would wait at the New York docks for the latest installment of Bleak House or some other sprawling saga about the vast panorama of Victorian society. It's hard to imagine any novel producing that kind of excitement in 21st century America. But for the last 3 years, friends of mine have been reacting like Dickens's readers to HBO's Baltimore-based crime series, The Wire. They race home to see it on Sunday nights, then spend Monday telling me it's the best show on TV. You can't just watch one episode, they always say. You have to see a whole season. I never got around to doing that until a couple of weeks ago, when I finally caught up with The Wire's first year on DVD. And you know what? I went through all 13 hours as fast as I could pop the discs into my player. Thank heavens I didn't have to wait at the docks. The story begins with Baltimore homicide detective Jimmy McNulty watching an obviously guilty drug dealer named D'Angelo Barksdale be acquitted of murder. The furious McNulty runs to a local judge, grumbling that the police are ignoring the Barksdale clan's enormous drug operation in the housing projects. And soon we're following an investigation by a racially mixed band of cops who are etched with the vividness of Daumier. There's the idealistic lesbian, the tightly wound careerist lieutenant, and the inept son-in-law of a departmental bigshot. The criminals they're investigating are equally well-drawn, be it the Barksdale gang's ruthless leaders, a righteous killer who lives by ripping off drug dealers, or D'Angelo Barksdale, who thinks the family business is hell, but just doesn't know how to escape. For much of the series, the cops and the crooks move along parallel tracks, but occasionally they intersect, as when McNulty and his partner, Bunk, bring in D'Angelo to question him about a murder.
We've been in here a whole 2 hours telling you what's true in the world, and you're going to sit there like nothing happened?
Where my lawyer at?
We called him. When he gets here, we'll let you know.
I got nothing to say. I mean, I'm sorry for the man, but I ain't got nothing to say.
You sorry? You sorry for him? You killed the man.
No.
Yes, you did. I mean, we don't think that you, shot him or anything. But if you weren't so busy lighting folks up in high-rise lobby, he ain't coming out of the elevator and seeing it happen.
He don't see anything. He doesn't testify. He doesn't testify. Those kids have still got a daddy to lean on.
But why he testify?
How the f*** should we know?
Well, he ain't had to testify.
No, he didn't, but he did. And you still beat the charge, didn't you?
Yeah, but that wasn't enough, was it? Not enough to beat the murder. They gotta send a cold message to everyone in the terrace.
The working man. His kids. That don't count.
The Wire was created by David Simon, a one-time crime reporter who anchors the series in the often undramatic realities of police procedure and routine crime. Where a normal cop show races along, it has to tie up everything neatly in less than an hour, Simon's program has a scope that even movie directors would envy. The series takes its sweet time, making room for the exploration of character, be it the silliness of McNulty and Bunk's horseplay, or the superbly written scene where D'Angelo teaches two young dealers to play chess. A bitter lesson to his troops that they're actually pawns in the great game between the police and their own bosses. Because it spans 13 whole episodes on a single investigation, The Wire does something you almost never see. It captures the daily realities of the workplace, with its petty rivalries, bureaucratic frustrations, and range of social types. McNulty is surrounded by all kinds of officers, cops who are drunks, cops who were clock punchers, cops who were in-house politicians, even cops who were crooks. And the drug trade is no different. It's a job, too. There are dealers who are junkies, dealers who are clock punchers, dealers who are in-house politicians, and dealers who, despite breaking the law, aren't really crooks. One reason people love those big, fat 19th century novels is that they offer a vision of society that feels comprehensive. They bring together the high and the low. No American program has come closer to doing the same thing than The Wire, which I've heard compared to Dickens and Thackeray, Balzac and Zola. I doubt that Simon's show will be able to claim such a legacy. Pop culture isn't built to last. But it does offer an X-ray portrait of a whole society, from powerful elected officials to scraggly drug addicts. And as the first season progresses, we realize that both the legal society and the illegal society, both McNulty and D'Angelo, are actually mirror images of one another. The kingpins on both sides care about power. The pawns on both sides are expendable, and everyone is caught in a shadowland that's almost a different universe than the reassuring one you find on CSI, where every crime gets solved through the use of high-tech equipment. Here, everyone's working with the low-tech of human fallibility, in which good and evil look mighty gray, and a commissioner of police can have less conscience than a killer.
John Powers is media columnist for LA Weekly and film critic for Vogue.